Good evening and welcome to the Ruckus Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's next door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th venue. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Ruckus Caucus.
Hey, and good evening. This is Terry DeKester with Mark and Garland are on their way. They're stuck in good old Washington, D.C. traffic. They're both close. They will be here in a moment to join me on the Ruckus Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. At the moment, it's just lonely me here. And we want you to know that hopefully you're getting used to this pattern. We are not at Ben's tonight, obviously. We're at the studio tonight, so we can take phone calls, and we'll be taking phone calls later, which we always enjoy doing. And that's part of the pleasure here of being at the studio to actually talk to you guys out there listening. We'll be accepting those phone calls a little bit later in the show. We are generally, and pretty regularly, it's getting pretty regular. You can pretty well depend on this on the second Tuesday and the fourth Tuesday of every month, and the fifth Tuesday if it's got five in a month. We will be at Ben's next door. And that's when we welcome you to come down there in person and join us. I also want to mention next week we are going to be in the second Tuesday in March. We are going to be at Ben's next door. We got an incredible special treat, and I really want to plug this, and I hope you join us. Mark Garland and I are going to be interviewing Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, I'm not making it up. No, we really are. We really are. As you probably know, 150 years ago, last Monday, Abraham Lincoln snuck into Washington, D.C. from Baltimore, trying to avoid any threats to his life. And on March 4th, he was inaugurated as the 16th President of the United States. That's March 4th, 1861. Well, we have the 16th President, Abraham Lincoln, joining us. Hi, Mark. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, see, I thought he was shot, but apparently...
apparently not.
Apparently, not only did he live, but he managed to...
resurrect.
Live 200 and some odd years.
Well, I've been doing some digging, let's face it.
Oh, you know? Okay. Yeah. All right.
No, I mean, obviously, you know, you understand that this is not an impersonator, but an actor, a... historical enactor. It's actually a man named Jim Getty from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, very renowned and acclaimed. But he will be there live as Abe Lincoln. We will be doing a relatively serious show, a little bit less raucous than normal.
I got some tough questions for Abe.
That's good.
You know, he came kind of late to the cause of getting rid of slavery.
I'm going to push him pretty hard on that. Oh, good, good. Let's offend the dead 16th president of the United States.
He's 200 years old. I'm sure he's heard it all before.
He can take it. Yeah, I'm sure he can. But it ought to be a fascinating show. So join us next door down at Ben's next door. Join us next week down at Ben's next door.
1213 U Street.
1211, actually. I got a correction from
you. Oh, is it?
It's 1211.
Oh, 1213 is Ben's Chili.
Right.
Oh, it's 1211. Excuse me. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
1211 U Street. And listen, if you've ever had a question you wanted to ask Abe Lincoln,
here, this is your chance.
I mean, this chance does not come often. Trust
me. No, it really doesn't. And we will be, as Mark mentioned, we will be talking on the issue of slavery. This is sort of inspired by what the National Park Service is doing around the country, and as particularly at this time in terms of slavery and in relation to the Civil War, and in fact that it was a real cause of the Civil War. Whether or not it was being spoken about openly.
It was being spoken about openly.
I tell you, there's been such a
rewriting among Confederate sympathists, shall we say, that actually they say, oh, it was states' rights. No, all you have to do is look at the South Carolina Petition of Secession or the Mississippi one, and they talked about, you know, the God-given right to slavery. So, not to
mention free labor in the cotton market and everything else.
Exactly.
Anyway, it ought to be a fascinating show.
I saw Garland walk in.
Who?
He's going to come any
Garland,
moment.
Garland is here.
But I do want to talk about the topic today because it's a very important one.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Wisconsin, and Garland's going to get in here in a second and just kind of give us his take on it, too.
I'll tell you why it's so important, though, because I really think this is a watershed moment in American history. This is the moment when the labor unions either revive or, frankly, die. I mean, it's that crucial to
working
people.
You and I are in agreement on that.
Wisconsin will define it. If Governor Walker wins, that is the end of unions in America.
Well, I thought he did win.
He has not won.
He passed a couple of the laws, hasn't he?
Well, he passed in the Assembly. The senators didn't come back unless something happened in the last few hours that I don't know about.
Oh, the senators are still not back. He's just passed them with the House.
In the Assembly, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Don't scare me like that. Garland, I was about to start singing funeral dirges for unions.
You might do that anyway.
I was afraid something happened in the last hour as I was running it. No. There were 14 Wisconsin Democrats in the Senate.
They're still out of the state, in Illinois, or wherever.
They're not coming home, and I think they're standing firm. Now, he only needs one of them to back down, but all 14.
Is that all?
That's all he needs, because they need three-fifths of the 33 members of the Senate.
Hey, Garland Nixon. Wow. It's
holy
him
moly.
Holy moly. It's him.
So we told him about Abe Lincoln next week.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And we've already got
my favorite president for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Well, you know, he wasn't so great. He was great, but I'm going to be hard on him because he was a little slow in abolishing slavery, and I'm going to ask him why.
Wait a minute. If we can treat John Conyers nice, we can treat the 16th president of the United States nice.
I plan to be respectful, but I've got some tough questions, Ron.
But you know what? Compared to all the presidents before him,
I'll
take slow.
Fair enough. Hey, listen, we're talking about Wisconsin, Garland.
And it was your topic, so Garland, jump in here.
Yeah, so, and I think what's the big issue here? It's funny we should talk about slavery. Because I think what's going to happen is they're going to reinstitute slavery in Wisconsin. What we don't talk about is this, too. Here's what's not discussed too much. What happens if he gets his way and, in fact, is able to abolish the rights of collective bargaining for the state and municipal employees in Wisconsin?
Well, the next thing is obviously for private unions.
Right. Well, no, but not just in the big picture, in the immediacy. I guarantee what's going to happen. He's going to start cutting their wages next year.
Of course. He only cut them 20%, right. So now comes the next 20%.
What do you mean? But what happens next? Here's what I see. Number one, you start getting rid of them. You start wiping them out. At some point, and I think the Republicans know this, at some point, all this crap about we don't need the government is going to stop. They're going to get rid of if they had their way, they'd get rid of so many public employees that the whole country would recognize we needed them, and they'd say, well, we do need these employees. I know. We'll hire them back as contractors.
Privatized.
And they would pay the wages.
Contractors twice.
The teachers will end up getting less, but some middle
contractors. No, they won't pay them twice.
They'll pay the contractors. The teachers won't get the money.
Somebody made a point in one of the columns in the Washington Post today that if they succeed in this and get the government workers, then they can really go to the other private workers
and say,
how much more benefit they get, and this is so unfair.
Let's look at what they've done. What have they done? Let's look at the military. Look at Iraq, etc. Because what the right generally is about is enriching their corporate cronies.
Absolutely.
Right?
Oh, Halliburton,
so what have
Blackwater.
They done in the military? What they did, the soldiers were angry because the soldiers said, wait a minute, we're escorting a convoy of trucks, and we're getting, God knows, the soldiers are getting less than minimum wage. But Bechtel and Halliburton guys are getting $1,000 a day. Ultimately, what the Republicans
are able to do is
they wipe out the private employees and they replace them and they privatize, they actually simply are able to funnel tax dollars into the hands of their corporate cronies. And I believe in the big picture, in the long run, I believe that's what this is about.
Let me give you one...
amongst other things, yeah. I mean. There's so many other things.
Let me give you a fact about this that I just read the other day, which is astounding.
Facts!
Facts have no place in this room.
This is a radio talk show.
Talking about the private contractors, and yes, that tendency in our government and by the Republicans. In Iraq, we sort of had the illusion that, we've got troops out of there and all that, and we might even get some troops out of Afghanistan. Right now, there are approximately 202,000 military personnel in Iraq and Afghanistan. There are 200,000 private contractors. There's still 400,000 men and women involved in the struggle, whatever you want to call it, in Iraq and Iran. There has been no withdrawal.
In the last 10 years, the amount we have spent on, quote, defense, unquote, and those quotes are
definitely
has gone up 120% in 10 years. It has more than doubled. what it was when George Bush took office. It's gone up 120%. And actually, surprisingly, only 60% of that increase is attributable to the 400,000 people you're talking about in Iraq and Afghanistan. Another 60% is just gravy.
Oh, yeah.
Planes, things the Pentagon doesn't want.
Extra engines for planes. Gold-plated
toilet seats. Yeah. So if you want to know why teachers have to have their salaries cut 20%, there's an obvious reason. There's some bomb with that teacher's name on it.
And the other thing is this. The Republicans what do the Republicans say? We have to tighten our belts and, you know, it's time for austerity and we've got to save money.
It's time for poor people to tighten their
belts. But here's the thing about it. You know, as one of my favorite quotes by the tuna, what's his name?
The coach for the
Giants, what's his name? The big you know what I'm talking about.
But at any rate,
one year
I thought you were talking about Charlie.
But anyway, one year he had a team and they had all of these stars, but they were like 1-5, and everybody said, "Wow, you've got all these great players, you've got a great team. How come you're not winning?" He said, "What do you mean great team?" He said, "We're not great." He said, "You are what your record says you are." Right? The Republicans are saying all this stuff. They have, if you look at them over the last 30 years, they have never tightened belts. They have never saved money.
They've always been the party of spending
and running up deficits. So ultimately, when you look at what they're doing now, ultimately, it's going to be about spending money somewhere. And when they spend, if you look at all of the things that they do and all of the bills, it always ends up to whether it's pharmaceutical, whether it's defense contractors or oil companies. It's always about taking the little man, the working man, dollars out of the treasury and putting them in the hands of the big corporations.
You know, if you ever want to know how the Republicans stand on any issue, you can name it. It can be global warming,
just
military,
ask where Halliburton
education.
Stands.
Ask whatever money makes poor and middle class people poorer and billionaires richer. And that's the Republican stance.
Right now, they're going to save money. They've got to save so much money. Have you looked at the cuts they're making? They're making cuts to the EPA. Cuts regulations right now.
Garland, there's not enough arsenic in your water.
Right.
You need more arsenic.
Do you realize if you have a corporation and you create a little bit of arsenic and it runs in a river every now and then, it's going to cost you money if you actually have to dispose of hazardous materials in
a healthy way.
Come on. I taught at an American university when they were digging up the arsenic from World War II. It had no effect on the students or the little kids playing in the mud or the teachers or the students there. We just walked right through the arsenic.
Yes. Well, that explains your brain damage.
We can see the effects of Terry right now. There's obviously mind-altering issues going on with arsenic.
Yeah, just while these other guys are walking around in white spacesuits, we have to go teach classes walking across the arsenic. Thank you, United States Army. There is a good side to this, though, guys.
I can't wait to hear this. There is a good side.
You know, and I was reading a really wonderful article. I hope you read it, too, by, it was an Andy Stern, the former president of the the Service Employees Union here, which has been a pretty strong union and has grown.
Oh, yeah.
And where most unions have shrunk, it's grown, at least in the D.C. area. But his whole point was that the unions, and I think this is crucial, and I hope they really buy this, they've got to rethink what their position is. They've got to define themselves. This is from Andy Stern, not from me. They've got to define themselves in ways that are creating jobs. And they've got to redefine how they're approaching the labor issue rather than just standing back and doing what they've done in the past, which is hang on, you know, scream and yell for every benefit and everything else, but really get into some kind of positive job-creating situation. And as a perfect example, another columnist, I forget which one, pointed out that what the teachers' unions need to do, and actually one of the federations of teachers is proposing this, is they've got to establish the standards and the ways of helping teachers be better teachers rather than leaving it to the government. They've got to take a positive push to win this battle.
Yeah, but let me take another perspective on that before Mark gets something in. You know, I wouldn't want him to get a word in edgewise.
No.
But at any rate, no, and that's this. That's, to me, when you look at what the Republicans are doing, that is not part of the equation, and let me tell you why. Because I don't think the Republicans, their attack on the unions has anything to do with whether or not the unions are good for America or good for teachers or create jobs. What it is about. A big part of it is this. The unions are able to organize the left. They're the
only major
left,
source of funds for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, they are the machine. They're the political machine.
They're equivalent of corporations for the right.
They're the political machine.
Oh, no, they're
machine.
Not equivalent.
Well,
you can't say
okay,
that.
Okay, they're not equivalent.
Yeah.
They're the best we've got.
Yeah, the best we got. Yeah, they got $1.380 to the corporation's billions.
It wouldn't matter from the perspective of what the Republicans are doing. It wouldn't matter how well the unions were doing to us regarding helping the system work. The Republicans see them as a political enemy. You dismantle them. You dismantle the Democratic voting machine. You can take over everything today in Wisconsin,
but, you know,
tomorrow the world. Oh, sorry.
But Andy Stern's point isn't that. It's not about the Republicans. It's about getting the American public back on the side of unions.
Well, I think they already are.
Well, let me respond
to both. No, they're not, unfortunately.
Let me respond to both of you, because you're both wrong, as usual. Now,
okay, Mark, now that you're finished. So
thank you, Mark. We're taking a break right here.
First of all, to Terry's point, I disagree with Andy Stern. I do agree with Randy Weingartner, the president of the American Federation for Teachers. She's already set up a process by which bad teachers can be fired.
And
I have no problem, by the way. I'm a big union supporter.
Just like Wall Street. When they make mistakes, they fire their...
They give them a bonus.
I have no problem with firing bad teachers. What she does is she say, if you want to fire a teacher, what you do is if you think the teacher's doing a bad job, they put in a detailed report saying what the teacher has done. They give them 1 year to fix it. If they don't fix it in a year, they're out.
Well, they have 100 days even after that.
They have 100 days after that. But when Andy Stern said that the unions need to worry about creating more jobs, the way jobs are created in America are when people demand products. And the reason why the economy is bad right now is there's not enough demand in the economy because poor and middle class people are suffering. If you give people a decent wage, they can demand products, the economy will do fine. Henry Ford got it right. He got many things wrong, God knows, but he got this right. He paid his workers enough
so they could buy a Ford.
So they could buy a Ford.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yep,
so
yeah.
By the unions creating better wages and living conditions, they are actually helping the economy and helping create more jobs. I don't think they have to do anything.
And you know what you're
that.
Saying, Mark?
I
what
think
you're
they
saying
do.
Is
I think
this.
They do. They've got to change their image.
The
but
opposite
go ahead.
Of Reaganomics and right-wing-onomics, and that is, instead of supply-side politics, what...
Demand-side
economics.
Right.
Because the demand is what creates everything. The
Absolutely.
Supply, well, you can have the greatest supply, but they don't care because, once again, that's all. But let me say this. Oh, I got to add this.
And then I got to address your point.
Yeah, and I got to add this. We have a special... There are a lot of people who maybe don't know a lot about Paul Robeson to know that he was very, very... A very strong union man.
Amen.
He was. Martin Luther King died working with...
Sanitation workers
down in
Memphis.
These were true left people. But and a lot of people have heard that Paul Robeson is one of the great... is probably the greatest baritone singer of all times. But what we're going to do is, right after the break, I'm going to play a Paul Robeson song called Joe Hill. Joe Hill was a union organizer that was set up for murder, that was framed for murder, and that was killed mainly because he was a union organizer.
Sure.
But we've got a song called Joe Hill. It's number 29 on the CD. But we're gonna play that. Joe Hill, Paul Robeson, you're going to love this song. And if you never heard Paul Robeson sing before, you will understand why he's considered...
If you've never heard Paul Robeson sing before, you haven't lived. You haven't been listening to WPFW.
Yeah, you haven't lived. Yeah. But you'll understand why he's the greatest baritone singer of all time.
I want to address, though, your point about the fact that the reason why Walker is out against the unions is because of their support for the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. But what's fascinating is his selective attack on the unions. It hasn't gotten much talked about here. He's going all after the teachers' unions who endorsed his opponent. But the firefighters and the police, they were split on the issue. Some of them actually supported him.
Right.
And so he is not trying to take away their collective bargaining rights.
Mm-hmm.
And when asked why it is that he's not taking away their collective bargaining rights, interestingly, he said, well, if they go on strike, we're all toast here. Well,
but no. The teachers, who needs them?
But, one thing. First of all, it's like our kids don't need an education.
No, of course not.
But secondly, no one was talking about their rights to go on strike. I mean,
if you want them to be right wingers, you wouldn't want to educate them.
You wouldn't
want to send them to Harvard. They'll be going to the left.
The teachers agreed to take these massive pay cuts, almost 20% of their salary. They agreed to take...
I thought they only agreed to 8%. Was there a
deal? 12% of their health care.
They gave him everything he asked for.
Yeah.
They gave him everything he asked for.
I rounded up to 20. But it's about 17 points.
Basically, everything he asked for.
Everything he asked for, they gave it to him. And he wants to take away the right to sit at the table to ask for more in the future.
Right.
He did not seek to do that for the police and the firefighters because some of them endorsed him. So this is pure political pain.
Let me ask you guys, because I don't know the answer to this. I mean, how is he getting away with this in terms of what weak, feeble labor laws we have?
He's not.
I mean, if you have...
If you violating that.
Yeah, if you have a contract with the state or you have a union,
you have to bargain in good faith. I
agree.
No. They're going to seek an injunction. I've already heard that they're going to court to seek an injunction.
The union is.
The union is to force him to bargain in good faith, because until the Wisconsin law changes, he is obligated to follow the Wisconsin law.
But he can change the law in Wisconsin so that literally Wisconsin does not have to bargain in good faith, and that just screw the contract.
That's
right?
What that would do. Yeah.
That's true.
Jeez, just think
we
corporate.
Well, no, there are a few southern states that are like that. In fact, interestingly, North Carolina doesn't have collective bargaining for private employees. Their deficit is higher than Wisconsin's.
Right. Well, in fact, 20%. In case you didn't know, the deficit rate on all these guys is Wisconsin is not that. I mean, it's bad. It's 12% compared to Illinois, which is 44%. New Jersey, which is 37%.
North Carolina is 20. I know that.
Yeah. California is 29%. So they're down at 12%. I mean, it's not good, but it's not as crucial as he's making out.
But he's just given away $140 million in tax breaks. They're going to take effect.
Oh,
If he doesn't do that, right, then he just takes that money, borrows it.
But those go to corporations.
Well, they do go to corporations.
So, I mean,
and corporations do have more money now than they've ever had since 1950. Right. He needs to make them have more. Because why break a record if you can't? Break it even.
The problem is these greedy working class people.
They are. They all want
to
have
bread. They want water.
They want a place to live.
Next thing you know, they want electricity and cable TV.
John Stewart said they want cars with windshields on them.
Well, they want one of the old Fords at least. And how dare they require
a Model T?
A Model T. They want at least be able to get that.
Why don't we do this? I'm sure there's someone. There may. I don't know. You know, I've been around PFW for quite a while, and I think there may be someone out there that agrees with us. Oh, you know. So why don't we give them the number?
I'd be shocked if there's someone who disagrees with us. 202. That's possible too.
588-0893. 202-588-0893. We may be able to take a caller or so. Get in. Now, 202-588-0893. We may be able to take a caller before the break. And, of course, don't forget, we're going to hear Paul Robeson, Joe Hill directly after the break.
And I want to ask people who are calling in, do they – I mean, I've said this is it. This is the defining moment for unions. But I don't know if our callers agree. Maybe this is just one moment in time. As far as I'm concerned, when you've got 100,000-plus people marching in Wisconsin in the snow in 15 degrees, I'd like to see Tea Partiers do that.
Keep marching. Keep marching. Head to Washington soon.
When you see 14 people staying in Illinois, I think this is something that will go down in American history as the moment when either unions were hit their bottom and started to revive, or, I'm sorry, were finished off. I really think this is the moment.
If Walker wins, have you seen the polls?
If Walker wins, the other states are going to follow suit.
60%.
61%. According to the latest Gallup poll.
Yeah, agree.
Support collective bargaining.
Support collective bargaining.
33% opposed.
And the Republicans, the bottom line is they really don't care. And Walker, if you look right now, his numbers have sunk to very, very low.
Well, he would have lost to his Democratic opponent. And I know what people are saying. I've heard the Republicans, well, elections have consequences. He won the election. Here's what they don't tell you. They don't tell you that he never ran on ending collective bargaining.
Right. Of course
he
not.
He did run on cutting teachers' wages. He did do that, but he never said he was going to end the right.
Well, let's interject a little bit of a little bit of knowledge and intelligence and sanity. I think Roland is out there online too. Roland,
hi, Roland.
Roland's not there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Roland, what's happening?
I'm here. I hear you guys caucusing and being raucous.
Yeah,
but if you guys put this, you guys are always pretty much. And you, I like the fact that you kind of. Your expansive in your explanation because you have different points of view and they all tie together, and that's excellent.
Well, thank you.
Here's something else to add to the pot. Look at the international flavor of the day, how these people in North Africa, so-called Middle East, are wanting these rights and want their freedoms. What are the corporations that lie behind the window thinking now? And when these people want to go to work and they put jobs in there and all that kind of business, do they want these people to know that the United States has collective bargaining, or do they want them to know that the United States has wiped out collective bargaining and you got to do what we say?
Well,
so Roland
reminds us.
You have to understand that the Republicans, after giving the rich what they want and taking this so-called national recovery, putting on the backs of the poorest and the least of us.
That's right.
Yep.
Can anybody in their right mind not see the picture? I say Governor Walker should win so we can go through the street.
Well, I'll tell you this. People are in the
streets, right.
And they're out in the cold in Wisconsin. And, you know, it's only going to get warmer in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's only going to get better, and I hope those crowds grow. Maybe the three of us can.
You know, I don't really understand what American worker, I mean, I know there are a lot, but what American worker doesn't want an organization that fights for their benefit?
The cops, interesting, the cops and the firefighters, the ones who he wasn't after, they still joined the teachers.
Yes, I know, which is why
we've got to give credit to them. They didn't say, all right, well, they're going after the teachers, we're safe. They understood.
But how does anyone?
For the teachers,
how do all
and
those
teabaggers,
how do
officers?
All those workers stand back and say, we don't want an organization that might fight for our rights as workers?
Because
how can you even say
you
that?
Know, they're buying into the propaganda, you know.
Well, 61% don't, Terry. Remember.
Well, in this situation.
Well, I think collective bargaining in general.
I don't know. 54% of college graduates believe that corporations should be less regulated.
No.
That must have been Fox News. Well, look, we've got Rich here on line one. Rich, what's happening?
You guys are making my head hurt.
Good.
Where did the socialists, the leftists, the communists think that there's a free lunch? There's no free breakfast.
Yeah.
There's no free college education.
Nope.
The country that I was raised in, my parents who are depression era, was you have to work for everything you get. Thank you.
So, Rich, are you saying teachers don't work hard?
No.
I guess what he's saying is, you know,
I wish Richard called back. We got to talk some more.
I think he's dissing teachers. He's saying, well, teachers
don't work.
They're not important. Kids don't need an education.
And I think Rich would have had a little bit of trouble defending that. So it might have been in his best interest to drop off.
I want to know why he thinks teachers are worthless.
Well, here's the thing about it. Actually, I think what just happened with Rich is an example of what we're looking at. People that don't know the difference between reasons that sound good and good sound reasons.
There you go.
He made a nice statement. Say with some
writing.
People've got to work hard. What does that really mean?
He's telling you that teachers and cops and firefighters and public servants don't work hard. He's not saying anything.
It's the equivalent of saying the sky is blue. When I came up, people had to work for everything they have. As if that's changed, there's really no relevance.
You know, I got news
When
Michael Eisner was CEO of Disney, he ran the company into the ground. He lost $1 billion, and he got a golden parachute of $250 million. To me, it's not working hard to lose $1 billion. I've never lost $1 billion. I've never lost $1 million. That means I'm $1 billion better than Michael Eisner,
at least.
And yet he got paid for it.
The CEO of J.P. Morgan.
If you don't want to reward people who don't work hard, Rich, do me a favor. Go after Wall Street.
The CEO of J.P. Morgan just got two weeks ago, he got a $17 million bonus. Now, let's not forget that J.P. Morgan took taxpayer funds, they counted it as profit, and then said, look, we're turning a profit now.
You know,
if you're that creative and you got that kind of cojones, you probably deserve $17 million.
But you've got to realize, some middle school teacher is grabbing an extra $1,000 for health care.
You got to realize, dude, that this is actually a Darwinian thing. I mean, we've really got to be aware of that. You know, it's this whole thing of some people are superior to others.
Right.
We've lost this whole respect for just labor in general. We've lost respect for workers.
That's a good point, Terry.
You know, and I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the guy that comes here and cleans the studios is as valuable a human
SEIU.
Being and as valuable a worker as the general manager, as you and me,
Absolutely.
Or anybody else.
What Martin Luther King said, all work is respectable.
And it's noble. All work is noble.
And I want to go back to what Roland said, because Roland was talking about the people in the streets of North Africa. They were fighting for freedom. They were fighting for the first part of Martin Luther King's dream. But Martin Luther King didn't stop when he got legal rights for every American. He went on to get economic rights.
And he said time and again that labor, that the struggle for labor and the struggle for equality for African for colored people,
for all
as they
Americans.
Said at that time, was linked.
Economic justice.
Yep.
No kidding.
Yep.
I almost said the bad word there. Hey,
let's get to the song by Paul Robeson.
We got to take a break, and then we're going to hear Paul Robeson. Dave, and James, don't go away.
Then we're going to hear Paul Robeson, Joe Hill.
If you want to be in the know, find your fun at Do and Go, the Do and Go Fun Finder, brought to you by the Arts and Humanities Council and the Montgomery Channel. www.doandgo.org. This message is brought to you by WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, serving the collective needs and imagination of the community.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm here with
Terry D. Kester
and
Mark Levine. And I think we're all a little somber now. After
yes,
that.
Wow. Man. Paul, I tell you, you know, for people who never heard Paul Robeson, that man, his voice is incredible.
It's if you ever beautiful.
Heard him, he's one of the most brilliant men that's lived in this country. Tremendous. But
tragic the thing life is, too.
And a very courageous message.
Oh my gosh! And just a courageous man. Courageous man. And he stood for so much. But he was a strong. I mean, he would labor first. And see, that's the thing. The attack on labor, because labor is the workers. Labor is the people. Labor, it's kind of like democracy, the way it's set up. And that is the many and the weak against the few and the powerful.
That's right.
And the many and the weak gather together.
Collectively, do they have any power?
Yeah. Otherwise, you go back to the Industrial Revolution.
It's like a thousand little twigs.
Yep.
Right? A thousand little twigs can't beat a stick. But what combined together, they can actually be
stronger. And if the right can rip that apart.
That's right.
And I honestly believe, and I think you guys do, you know, if the corporations really had their way, and boy, they're getting their way in so many ways, if they really had their way, if they could reinstitute slavery, they'd do it.
Oh, we'd be singing Old Man River, buddy.
Really
be
doing
an old man. So let's go to James. James, line three.
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Hi, James.
All right, what's happening, James?
I am familiar with Paul Robeson, but my question is this. How is it that we have so many poor people vote for the Republican Party?
Yeah.
People who need health care say they don't want it. I mean, we have discussions in my little group, and, hey, I come to the conclusion they just want to hurt another group. These people don't deserve it. I worked hard. I did this like that caller before. I did this. So Why do we have to give everybody? What's your take on that?
I'll say this.
Thank you.
There is a
false premise.
So many arguments from the writer are made on false premises. When he says, I work hard, or the right says, I work for mine, the premise is
that people
don't have as much as me are lazy.
Right.
That people aren't
worth
rich
as much as a human being.
They don't have it because they're lazy.
That's right.
The poor are poor because they're lazy. The working poor are working poor because they're lazy. The false premise is that people that have the most in our society have it because they're the most industrious, the hardest workers. A lot of them had the foresight to be born into a wealthy family.
I was just going to say, these are the same Republicans that don't want an estate tax. They want people, if your great-great-granddaddy was a slave owner and made a lot of money off the backs of slaves, that should be passed around generation to generation to generation without ever being taxed, so you never need to work again. Now, who's lazy now?
And there's a culture thing here.
And the other thing that they always do, and I think we're all aware of this too, is they play off one side against the other.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this goes back, particularly like during the Jim Crow mm-hmm. days, you know, was really the most vicious time, but it still goes on today. They're always playing poor people or less financially well people against other people and saying if it weren't for them, if it weren't for the immigrants, if it weren't for the African
Americans, you know what this is?
You know,
this is
then you would, then you,
know,
then you would be rich.
They're saying to the person who works for a corporation or who works for themselves, It's not our fault. It's not the Wall Street bankers' not fault. It's not the wealthy. It's not our fault.
Even though they caused
it's
the depression.
The people who work just like you, but they're government workers. You divide them down the middle.
That's right.
The private workers over here, you're the good guys. See those government workers? They're the bad guys. Any way you can divide the workers,
strategy,
whether it's by race or religion or anything,
economic
or anything
status,
else.
Anything they can do to divide
strategy.
You.
You know, even before the Civil War, people forget. Who were the people fighting for the South in the Civil War? They weren't the slave owners.
Poor white Southerners.
That's right. 75% of whites in the South did not own slaves. And in fact, if you were a very rich slave owner, if you had 20 slaves, there was something called the 20 Negro Rule. Mm. And if you had 20 slaves, you didn't have to fight in the war. So you had poor whites fighting for the rich whites so that they wouldn't be like the even poorer and more mistreated black slaves.
I think the House put something like that in the budget that they proposed.
The
20 Negro Rule, something like that.
And apparently a lot of the grandchildren of those people that fought in the Confederacy are now teabaggers. I guess that's right.
But it's culture, man. It's culture. A lot of it is culture.
The only way the rich are ever going to win is if they divide up poor and middle class people and get us fighting each
other.
Which
is why unions are called unions.
That's right.
You're supposed to bring people together.
Which is why Walker's trying to divide the teachers and the police and the firefighters. Yeah, right. And the police and the firefighters did not fall for it.
And they do it all the time, too. And I've seen it. I belong to three unions, I'm happy to say. And I've seen it happen all the time. That if somebody in a union gets in trouble and if they can make them think that the co-workers aren't with them, they'll screw that guy.
Let's go to Jeffrey.
They do it all the time.
Someone else wants to call 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're talking Wisconsin. Jeffrey on line one.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. Are you a lazy teacher? Just want to check or worker or something?
I know. I heard that other call. I'm going to say three things. One thing that your guys would not have the nerve to say. Americans are among the most educated but dumbest people on the entire planet.
I think we've said that.
I like to say politically ignorant.
You got to start facing some reality. You know, corporations, the Supreme Court made them humans, gave them these rights.
That's right. Are
literally evil. I guess, you know, for those who are religious, if they think about, like, the 666, it's probably a corporation.
But you're right.
They will do you in. And the unions, though, and I think somebody mentioned Guy Andy, and I think he had a good point because, you know, you got to face it. If we don't step up to the plate and do what we need to do and deliver at a level that at least gives us some success, then we will be conquered. And the corporations, it's sort of like they out-PR'd us. I mean, let's not talk about the Jimmy Hoffa era. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot to say on the one side about somebody who's oppressing and just trying to screw somebody. But on the other side, what are we doing to defend ourselves? And if we don't perform to the degree that we need to, you know, they're not going to say, well, he tried a little bit, so I'll just let him win. No. You need to step up. And I think that's where we are falling down. Because, I mean, we can always talk on the other side of the equation. Look how bad they're trying to do us in. But we need to start looking at, you know, how weak we were defending ourselves. I mean, weak Democratic candidates in Wisconsin. And we're not going to the polls. That's why we got that crap.
Yep. He only won 52% of the vote. Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is the same Wisconsin that elected Russ Feingold 6 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So, listen, people are suffering. The economy's tough. And the Republicans say, oh, we can make the economy better. The irony is, I don't know if you read there's a recent AP poll.
Oh, yeah.
There's also the economists, not just liberal economists, but even Goldman Sachs, is telling you that because of these cuts that the states are doing, giving the money to billionaires, even Goldman Sachs.
It's inhibiting the economy.
It's inhibiting the economy. Because when you take away every last dime from poor people, lo and behold, Goldman Sachs says that the GDP is going down 2%.
Yep.
Other economists say at least 0.5%. The Commerce Department says it's down. Every economist in the nation recognizes that when you grab every last dime from poor people, guess what? Demand goes down. Even if you don't give a damn about poor people, even if you think that poor people and teachers and all are worthless, guess what, rich folks? They actually help the economy. You need the poor people.
And for those fans of the Raucous Caucus, one Mark Levine, who's sitting right next to me, had an entire show, if I remember correctly, where he said, we need to spend now,
exactly.
Not cut.
Exactly.
And once we get
government,
the economy,
government needs to spend now,
right. Not
yeah.
cut. And once we get the economy back on track,
then we can start.
And unfortunately, you know, the opposite is happening. And this is really
always ahead.
This is really scary too, because what people are doing today, they are spending more, a little bit more at this point. They're going to, but they're spending it on credit. They're spending it on debt, which is going to create the same damn situation that we were in before.
Our economy was just starting to recover.
Yep.
The Republicans could have that. And they can't have that because if the economy recovers, people will reelect Barack Obama.
We're going to go to Ray. We got Ray on line 3. Ray, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hey, you guys are on fire tonight. I don't even know if you all need me tonight.
We always need you, Ray.
Listen, again, many people from the right, they're what you call aspirationally rich. They make one half of what I do. They're struggling. They're not making it. I just sent, this is God's honest truth, I just sent $100 to a woman who, her daughter went to my college, she's Republican, she's conservative, she's got no health care, she doesn't like liberals, she always votes, she's sick as a dog now, she has no money, she lost her job.
Why is she Republican?
I will help take care of the people that... she votes against her interests.
Why,
and again,
Ray? Why? Have you talked to her about it?
One day they'll be rich. And the guy that called earlier, you know, he don't work, I'm leaving work now. I got in there at 7 a.m. I got a mentally handicapped son who's 20. I wake him up at 5 o'clock to get him in the shower, take his diaper off. I get home at about 9:30 because I drive about an hour and a half away. I feel sorry for guys like that because his grandmother is being cared for by somebody that makes $5 an hour.
Mm-hmm. You live in Maryland, don't you?
His children are being taught by people whose jobs are being threatened.
Right.
Their benefits are being taken away.
He goes into
a hotel, and that bed he stays in is being made by someone that makes $7 an hour.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you hate the poor. That guy hates the poor. He hates, but you know who he really hates? He hates his ancestors. He hates his mothers, fathers, and grandfathers because they were poor. See, when you hate someone, you're really hating yourself and those who raise you. And that is the problem with some of these conservatives. We have a love deficit in this country. We have an empathy deficit. These people don't care. And I know this. Last thing I'm going to say, you know, for the conservatives that hate liberals, you know what? It's a whole lot of liberals that fought in World War One, World War Two, that are in Iraq, that are in Afghanistan. I have as many flags from my father who died and my uncles and my father-in-law's flag who's in my house because we're taking care of my mother-in-law. I have as many flags as any of these guys that pretend they're American, that wave the flag and talk this garbage. So the conservatives, they need some love and caring. They didn't get it when they were younger, and that's why they hate everything.
Ray, great call.
We certainly appreciate you listening.
Ray, thanks for jumping in there.
Let me remind everyone, you're listening to the Raucous Caucus.
My
name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Terry D. Kester.
And Mark Levine.
And we're on. I hope you enjoy this show. For those who have listened the first time, and for those who aren't, I'll tell your friends about it. We're on every Tuesday here at 89.3 FM, WPFW in Washington, D.C., every Tuesday
7
from 7 to 8 p.m. We have a blast.
And every 2 weeks we're in Ben's
every
next
second,
door.
Second Tuesday and fourth Tuesday and fifth Tuesday, if there is one, we are in
and where
fact
are we going to be next
Ben's
week?
We're going to be at Ben's next
with
door.
With Abraham Lincoln.
With Abraham Lincoln. We're not making this up. We're going to be having a dialogue, a conversation, questions with Abraham
Lincoln.
You think
he'll let me wear the hat?
No.
No,
no, come on.
Look, if you're enjoying this show, come on down, meet us. We stick around for a little while after, for a while after the show. We talk to people. We have fun. We exchange cards and email addresses, and we have a lot of fun. So come on down to Ben's. It's right next to Ben's Chili Bowl on U Street. Come on down. We're all the way in the back. Come back to up to the mezzanine. Listen to the show. Have some food.
Participate. You can participate.
And enjoy it. Now,
before we go on, I just want to say something about, because I thought Ray's comment was masterful. I thought it was beautiful. I just want to say something about being aspirationally rich.
Yeah,
there's
I like
nothing
that phrase,
wrong.
Right?
There's nothing wrong with being aspirationally rich. I would love to be Rachel Maddow and have my own show and make millions and millions of dollars. I would love that.
That would be nice.
But I'm not aspirationally selfish. Okay, if I made all that money, I would be happy to pay more taxes and support my country. You can be rich without being aspirationally an a-hole.
But you're not aspirationally rich in the sense that all I have to do is work a little bit harder for the man, and then I'll be a billionaire.
And we're going to go to
such a lie.
And the other part of it is, the only way I'll really be happy in life
is if I'm rich.
Yeah. Forget doing what I do.
And
RC,
I can abuse
check
other
out
people.
Charlie Sheen.
Listen, the Kennedys, the Roosevelts were plenty rich, but they understood. They call them limousine liberals if you want, but they were liberal.
That's right.
They didn't look out for their own interests. They looked out for others. And even if you want to be rich, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you stop looking out for your fellow human being, there is something.
RC.
And if you're rich by exploiting others, which is kind of inherent.
We got RC on line one.
202-588-0893.
Hey, this is Rashid.
Hello,
Rashid. I thought it was RC.
Okay.
No, it's just Rashid. Listen, man, you know, your dialogue is real good. And for whatever it's worth, I'm 72 years old. Your dialogue is good. I'm so glad that we have WPFW.
Thank you.
That's what democracy should sound and look like. And I'm going to make it short. You know, our condition is not going to change until we change what is in our heart.
Mm-hmm.
The comment about the Tea Party people being the children of the former slaveholders, and I'm an African that was born in America. You know, that point was well taken. I was well aware of that. Because, you know, if you've been around the block a few times just like I have, you hear and you see things, and you know exactly what's in their heart by the way they present themselves. But look, let me congratulate you. I enjoy your show. And I look forward to listening to y'all every Tuesday.
All right, well,
thank you.
We got to come down to Ben's and meet us.
Yeah, come visit us, please. Rashid. We'd like to meet you.
We got to meet you.
Yeah, it makes me feel good. I love when I hear people that appreciate WPFW as a radio station.
That's right, because there's nothing like it, really.
No.
I mean, Pacifica stations are unique.
Don't forget, the Congress up there is still trying to cut funding for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting.
Don't forget that.
You got to keep fighting that battle.
And NPR, too.
Yeah. These battles are not over just because they're not in the headlines right now.
Hey, if you want to join us today, 202-588-0893. We can still take a few more calls.
Another thing about when people say that people are voting against their interests, there's another thing, and I bring it up here every so often. There's another issue, and there's a cultural issue, and there's a cultural battle that is worldwide. It's been the right versus the left, and it's been the right versus the left here, and the Union versus the Confederacy, and the red states versus the blue states. It's all the same thing.
You notice the Union was called Union.
I noticed that.
Yes. For unions.
Right.
But if you and you notice, if you overlay the Union, the blue states and the gray states, you get the blue states and the red states.
That's
today. It's
true.
The same exact culture. But here's the culture. Here's the culture war.
The blue states are still blue.
The
gray just turned red.
Right. The radical individualist. Me. Mine. Did you know he said, I made mine.
That's right.
Mine. Mm-hmm. It's mine.
Selfish.
Now, that guy over there is hungry. Can he have a biscuit? No.
It's all mine.
It's the radical individualist that says it's all mine. Yep. Versus people who see America as a neighborhood.
I stole it fair and square.
That's it. We took it from the Native Americans and it's ours. But versus people who see the world, who see the
as
state,
a community.
Who see the country as a neighborhood, a community.
Yep.
A union! You said it.
Who was
next? Jordan?
Hey, Jordan.
Jordan,
welcome.
Hi, Jordan.
Hi. Hey, guys. First time listener, actually. I just kind of caught you guys flipping through the radio, and really enjoyed the show so far.
Thank you.
And I'm kind of an amateur policy guy, and I'm pretty, you know, libertarian, free markets, not very Keynesian, but my comment was, I recently read something, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating, and it was about how in 29 and 2007, the wage gap was so large that it was absolutely unheard of.
Yep.
And it kind the largest has been since 1929. Interesting year.
Exactly, exactly. And if you were to, you know, compare that with the highest tax rates, it's almost like complete opposite. So in the 50s and 60s, the marginal tax rates, the highest tax rates were really high.
91%.
But yet America was so prosperous, whereas then in the 20s and 30s, and then now, you know, the wage gap is huge, and the marginal rates were very low. And I just think that's something that somebody needs to look at. I mean,
Jordan, it's a good point, and I would ask you to reevaluate what you said about John Maynard Keynes, because I think you'll find that the man was absolutely right. All Keynes said. You said, I'm not a Keynesian. Let's just talk about what Keynes said, because I do have a degree in economics. I have studied him, and I encourage you to read what he wrote, because he was absolutely right in the 1930s. What he said is, when there's unemployment, not all times, but when there's unemployment, when there's underemployment, that if the government spends more, that creates a virtuous cycle where more money goes in the economy, more people have money, they spend, and that gets the economy out of depression. It is entirely because of Keynesian spending that we got out of the Great Depression in the 30s and 40s. Herbert Hoover tried the Republican strategy.
Oh, yeah, they cut on.
What did he do? Herbert Hoover, he balanced the budget.
You can't leave out World War II. You just can't
leave it
out.
Well, World War II is Keynesian spending.
Wait a minute,
Terry.
I like
World
to call it Hoover as big giant government stimulus.
Yeah.
It was a giant government stimulus package.
Oh, that
exactly what it was.
Yeah. You should also read Adam Smith, because, I mean, people use Adam Smith as...
He's more reasonable than the Republicans.
Oh, much more. He's not a rampant, crazy capitalist at all.
But let me say this. He used a term, and this is what I think we need to address more. He used a term that I think is based on a false premise. He used the term free market.
Yeah, right.
There is no free market.
There has never been a free market.
It is highly manipulated, even more so than ever, by very, very powerful. Now, market is so highly manipulated by corporate interest that it is not free. It hasn't been free.
America,
but let me say this.
Was,
and the only thing that can check our market and keep it, bump it in the direction of free, is government regulation.
America was the first country on earth to in 1886, they passed the Sherman Antitrust Act. And, and Teddy Roosevelt followed to bust up the monopolies, because there was one steel company and there was one oil company.
Robert Barron.
Johnny Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie. And when that happened, the American economy went to overdrive, and from then on, we became the strongest country on earth economically. When the corporate interests retake their monopoly power, destroy the free market, destroy
competition, in oil,
and without government keeping them honest, let's face it, that causes our economy to go down. So to have a true free market, you got to watch the corporations and not let them have monopoly
interests. You've got to rein them in. You've got to keep competition. And you don't create competition by having companies. I love it when companies combine and merge.
Right.
And they always claim it's going to be more competitive, which is exact opposite
how
of what happens.
Companies,
how many times do we have to see this happen?
25 years ago, how many companies owned all the major media outlets as opposed to
four now? Six?
Right. And who thinks, does anyone really think that we're getting better and more accurate news now than we got before?
Well, people think with all the cable TV that there's all different stations. They're all owned by the big guys.
That's right. There's like six companies that own almost everything.
Anything.
Right.
Anthony.
Hello, can you hear me?
Is this Anthony?
No, it doesn't sound like him.
This is the one and only.
Yes, it is.
Okay, all right, good.
Recognize the voice.
Your only fan.
We've had lots of fans.
I'm your number one fan.
Call up and hurt us.
Okay, Anthony, you got important stuff to say here, buddy.
Real quick, a couple of things that we really need to focus on. I'm a federal employee, but, the fact of the matter is, the rhetoric behind this assassination and this demonization of the federal employees or public sector workers just simply isn't true. And this is yet another failing of the Democratic Party of pointing this point out. But the main issue I want to point out today is that this isn't going to be an isolated incident. If this is at all successful, they are coming for you next.
Absolutely.
Yes, you better believe it.
A Republican national trend. So everybody who's sitting back, thanking God that you live in Washington, D.C., you won't be in a position to do that for long. So, if we don't get together and take ourselves and put ourselves in the street now, it's going to be a problem. So And a second issue, though, is, and this is about unions, but it's not about public sector unions, more about private sector unions. I think that one of the things that we learned during the automotive bailout is that we do have a problem. We do have a broken union model that we really need to address. We
yes.
need to figure out better ways to work out compensation, possibly a way to tie the success of the company to the success of its workers, because it is possible, particularly in the private sector, for unions to be detrimental to their company.
So you can't leave seniority either as the only factor
no,
in terms of people.
No, it's
got to
be pay for performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I tend to agree.
That's kind of what Andy Stern is saying. I mean, the unions have to change too.
I tend to agree with those guys, but then something just keeps saying, for God's sake, the people on Wall Street don't. You know, what we're saying is this. If you are a working man or woman, we want you to play by these types of rules.
Yeah, but
however,
the rich
if you're
guys
on
don't
Wall
pay.
Street and you're making $80 million a year.
No, that's not what we're saying. No. Come on.
No,
that's not what Anthony's saying.
Not
that's not
saying,
what I'm
no,
saying.
No, no, no. I'm not
no,
saying
we're
that's
not saying
what,
that at all.
I'm not
we're
saying that's what Anthony
there's
or
a war.
You're saying.
There's a war here, and we've got to find the best way we can to market ourselves and market what union workers are and market what unions can do and improve the image of the unions. If we don't do that, we're not going to win the
war.
You're
right, but I'll tell you, we're always so pessimistic. Let's look for once on the bright side. There, not only do 61% of Americans support collective bargaining, but more than 100,000 people in Madison, Wisconsin, at 15 degrees in the snow.
They take it to the streets there.
They are taking it to the streets, and they should be praised.
Because
I got to tell you, this is a defining moment. I'm getting chills.
Yeah. Are the governors still meeting here? Because they have been demonstrating outside the Marriott here as well.
They've been demonstrating everywhere. This is a national.
I mean, people should be going down. The governors are still here at the Marriott, right?
This, you know.
Are they? Yes, no? Does anybody know?
I don't.
I mean, if they are, then everybody should get up tomorrow morning and they should go down there and help the union and demonstrate with them, because they're demonstrating for the rights of people. That's what they're demonstrating for.
Thought he was talking to the billionaire Koch brother, all right? Mm-hmm. He said that this is our time. This is our moment. He was right about that. This is our time. This is our moment. This is our chance.
And who is
to
our?
Show.
And who,
yeah.
And who is
we?
Our time.
And who is our?
This
the
is
we.
To
we
show
the Koch
country
brothers.
That we are e pluribus unum, that we do stand from many one, that the people, the working and middle class people of this country, aren't going to take this class warfare anymore. Right. That we're tired of all our wages being transferred.
That we're
going to
hit the streets.
And that we're going to do terrorists hitting the streets. So let's end on some
optimism about
because
it.
I was upset that prior to November, I didn't see this kind of activism.
No.
Unfortunately, sometimes you have to hit Democrats and liberals over the head until they're bleeding, until they wake up.
But we
are waking up.
You only get change when you only get change when the status quo is more painful than any other option.
Yeah.
Out there,
yeah.
And people
go.
Now that they're sitting on hot coals.
That's
now,
right.
You know, and the thing is, we've been preaching. You people need to get up. They need to scream. Terry's been saying we need to take
to the streets.
Well, we
we've
have to. Be, I mean, you know, it's the same thing that Mark was saying before. You know, I mean, against this moneyed power that exists, this corporate power that exists. If we don't unite and if we don't demonstrate, that power is feeling totally invulnerable, and they're going to trounce on us every way they can.
All we have is our bodies and our voices.
That's
all we got. We don't have the money.
Right.
And
no.
It's anti-democratic. It's anti-democratic because...
It's anti-human.
Yeah, and it's anti-democratic as far as our political system, because part of the plan is to dismantle the democratic machine so that even though they may have more people than we do and more voters, we destroy their ability to unite their voters.
They meaning
to
us.
Get them to the... Yeah, if you're
that's
a Republican.
They are literally trying to
make sure that it's government of them, by them,
and for them. Which is fewer people, they can still win an election.
Which is why,
which is
after they cut the teachers' benefits, they didn't end it there.
Of course not.
You can never have a right to ask for benefits again, because they know that we will win the next election, certainly in Wisconsin. We're going to kick out these bad guys, and they want to put in place a system that says you need a two-thirds vote to ever get rid of what we tried to do.
Did you see that? Yeah, and a two-thirds vote to raise any taxes on anything, which is so irresponsible.
It seems to me
it's
unconstitutional, because you could just vote majority to end that two-thirds requirement.
Well,
and
you
then
would think.
But,
hello,
but,
Senate.
But the point is, they're trying not just to win today. They're trying to, win the future.
They're trying to
and
take advantage. They're trying to take advantage of an economic downturn to institute the policies that they wanted to institute all along.
For decades. Yep.
Yeah,
so,
this is a social issue. This is not an economic issue.
It has nothing
issue.
To do with it. They're taking advantage of the economic time to
that
do what
they caused,
that they
by
created.
The way.
Yes, right. To remind
if somebody wants to get in touch with you, Mark, what do they need to do?
Go to marklevinetv.com. And by the way, I'll have this show posted up there as soon as I can so you can hear it.
Terry.
WPFW.org in person down at Ben's next door. We're going to walk with Abe Lincoln right through Ben's and right through Ben's Chili Bowl and Ben's next door.
I
can't wait to see the reaction.
We want y'all to join us. Yeah.
And if you want,
come early because seats are going to be short. So come there by 6:30.
If you want to get in touch with me, garlandin@gmail.com.
Or just Facebook us.
And
believe it or not, if you want to get a copy of that Paul Robeson CD, it's got like 30 songs on it. I know how to get a copy of that.
I bet if you give a donation to WPFW, you could give them a copy.
I could probably do that.
Yeah.
Believe
that
it or not,
nice.
Paul Robeson Jr. gave me that CD.
Wow.
Gave me that CD himself. And I can tell you how to
Garland
get your hands
famous
on them.
People.
Wow, that's nice.
I know him
that's
very
nice.
Well.
Hey,
but
Brother Ah is next, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Jazz
we're
going to
have some civility and sanity.
That we are. Dave has
Thanks
been doing an
Kelly.
Excellent
Dave,
job for
Dave.
Us again. Working hard. Thank
our
you,
brother.
Dave.
And thanks to all our callers.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
WPFW 89.
At Ben's Next Door.